She's got her voice back.
To talk about the voices of heroes.
And here we go.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
That damn intern. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast, streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can listen live every Monday, well, at least for the time being, at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. We have plans to make some shifts around with our starting time. We'll have more information on that later on in the show. But my name is Tom, and as always, I'm here with my amazing co-host, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all. Nick or Trish.
And
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome y'all to
The Dish.
I'm turning my head for those that are watching on Patreon just to make sure that everything is recording and we're live and everyone can see everything. So anyway, welcome back to the show,
Wait,
guys.
So are we recording?
Yes, we are. Oh, my God.
Can you confirm, please?
Yes.
Yes, I can confirm. I see a lot of lines moving up and down.
So welcome back. I got my voice back.
Darn.
Yeah.
Yay.
So happy.
It's been an interesting week. It's been crazy for work for all of us, right? Yeah. And work, school for Chris. We'll talk about that a little bit. So why don't we just jump right into it? Chris, why don't you tell us how's school going?
School's going good so far.
Yeah.
It's starting to get busy.
A little crazy?
Yeah, it's starting to get busy.
Yeah. Well, busy's good. You know, keeping the mind occupied.
So hard not to throw him under the bus. I'm literally like holding everything back.
Greatly appreciated, man.
Well, let's build a wall.
Build the wall.
Yeah, no, she can climb over it.
Well, that's true. Actually, I think somebody showed a video or something of people climbing over those walls.
They were having races.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who could climb it fastest?
Yeah. I was dying. Anyway, but you know, so all is well. How was your weekend?
Busy, very busy. I worked Friday, worked Saturday, and then Sunday, yesterday, we held our biannually Oktoberfest at the Hartford Sanger Bund, the German club I belong to.
Not a word.
So, yeah, no,
it's not a word.
Whatever. It was, we were expecting approximately 300 people. We did well over 500 people. The president was bartending with me. Now, she's 70. She was back there. She was working her butt off, but like no other people really showed up except for this one woman to work the bar. So I was on the bar from 12 to 8. By 6 o'clock, we were about to run out of kegs of beer.
Well, honey, I have three words for you. You better work.
Yeah, she did work. We poured 14 kegs.
Holy shit.
Wow.
14 kegs of beer. And then on top of that, the bottles and the mixed drinks and everything.
What do you call those mugs?
Steins.
The steins?
Yeah.
Did you pour them in steins?
No, it's because it's such a busy event. Everything's in plastic. You know, we don't want to be having everyone drop shit all over the place for people getting hammered.
Well, that's the fun about it. Right?
Yeah, but I don't want to clean that up. It's more fun when I'm the one. Exactly. Yeah. This is true.
Yeah.
But no, it was a really good time. The turnout was great. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So it sounds like everyone, you know, enjoyed themselves for the Oktoberfest.
Yeah, and it was really cool because I guess they advertised it in the paper. We had, I don't know how the hell we got our hands on this. We had this one keg that is brewed by monks at this this monastery up in the Bavarian Alps. I forget the name of the monastery. They've been brewing for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. We got our hands on one keg.
Wow.
And it's nearly impossible to get that. That keg sold out in less than 90 minutes.
Did you taste it?
Oh, it was like the nectar of gods. It was liquid gold. It was absolutely incredible. The president, she's like, it's an out-of-body experience when you drink this beer. It is the most pure, beautiful beverage ever. Most beautiful thing to ever enter my body or touch my lips.
Wow, that's saying a lot.
That's saying a lot.
And I've been.
Sorry, boys.
Speaking of boys, how's Bobby?
He's good.
Oh, that's wonderful.
See, I was trying to hold everything.
Not me. No.
There's nothing wrong with friends hanging out.
That's amazing. No. Yeah. Well, that's good.
Did you let him hang out in your mouth?
I thought you were holding back.
I was trying, but then he brought it up.
So yeah, Oktoberfest is a lot of fun.
All right, so we're moving on. That was the look. Like, bitch, I'll cut you. Anyway, so Trish, how are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah.
Kind of a boring weekend, honestly. I worked on Friday. I worked on Sunday. Saturday, it was my day. It was beautiful. I went to the store. I made myself some food. I watched The Politician. Ben Platt is in a new Netflix series. Amazing. So good. Did I finish it in one day? Yes.
Of course you did.
It was so fucking good. And then Sunday I like cleaned, and it was kind of a boring but lucrative weekend for me.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was okay. Mom and Dad were away at the bar, our bosses. We call them Mom and Dad. So it was weird, right? It's like Saturday started off slow, and then all of a sudden we got bombed at the end, as usually happens. And Sunday was you know, uneventful. We had a good karaoke night. It started off, again, a little slow, but then it's just like, boom, everybody just showed up out of nowhere.
I had to, like, calm people down, which was weird.
I know.
It was
like,
so weird.
I was like, holy shit. It was like people... Yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah.
I had a very scary weekend, unfortunately. My little Fitzy, one of my puppies, has been battling an ear infection for the past couple of weeks, which I've been maintaining.
Thank God you don't have kids. Yeah.
No, but you know, so he, because of the shaking, you know, when dogs have ear infections, one of the things that's a telltale that there's something wrong with their ears is that they start shaking their heads uncontrollably or start leaning to one side. He ended up, because he was shaking so vigorously, he developed a hematoma in his ear. Oof. And so he's got a very big, like, bump inside one of his ears. And so I ran to the hospital, which is right down the street, by the way. Amazing.
Like a people hospital?
No. The
And when you say hospital. Ran, he literally grabbed the dog and ran.
I literally grabbed the dog, threw it in my car, and said, we're going to the vet.
Why would you
vet.
Throw your dog if he's already, like, not feeling well?
No, I didn't throw him. But, you know, I grabbed him. I put him down. He was such a good boy. We went. They cleaned out his ears really well, and then they put medication in there. And so the diagnosis is that, yes, he has a hematoma. I looked it up. I read a little bit about it. So when we got there, the vet already knew what to expect. But it's not one that's very huge, so they don't need to drain it, and they expect that what's going to happen is over the course of the next 2 weeks, the liquid that's inside will absorb into the body, and so it'll go away. And so that's where I am with my baby. Yeah, he's been such a good boy, though, over the past, like, 2 or 3 days. He's been on me like white on rice, and...
So I call Tom... What day was it? It was Saturday, yeah. And I was kind of bitching about some thing that was going on in my life. And
as always.
And, well, yeah,
I was taking
pretty much.
You beat me to it.
And without a minute, like drop of a hat, he's like, so Fitz. And I was like, what? Yeah. I'm bitching about my life. You're like, my dog's almost dead. I'm like, no, he's not. He's fine.
No, I have to. So I did. But here's what I found, though. So I went into this hospital.
Oh, that's my...
That's his book.
Anyway. That's my book that's now playing.
I was like, what the fuck is going on
now
right now?
Now playing on Gay Talk, whatever Nick is listening to.
Out in the open.
Okay. Available on Audibles?
Yep.
Okay. So,
I was like, are you guys not hearing this?
Oh, wait, no, they're having sex right now. I got to pause that.
Yeah, please do. No, so I went to this hospital, and it's a VCA. It's a hospital that's right here in Milford. It's like literally 4 minutes away from my house. I didn't know it even existed. So they treated my puppy and my baby so well that I'm considering changing over from going to North Haven and going to this new hospital because they were just so amazing. And they called me today just to check up on him and make sure that he was okay. And overall, the experience there was amazing. And so I'm going to... cancel my insurance that I have with this other hospital that I was going to and start a new insurance plan with this hospital because the experience in itself was amazing. So I'm super excited about that. One, it's very close, but you know, when you treat my babies well, you've got me. Take my money.
You never give me money.
You don't treat me well.
I treat your babies well, though. You just said if I treat your babies well.
For a vet. I don't know about...
All right, this got weird anyway.
Anyway, so listen, there's so much happening. You know, our hashtag not our president, or at least not mine, is officially... it was officially announced that he is going through... Well, the House of Representatives are officially going through impeachment proceedings because of an interaction that he had with a foreign power and where he tried to get information or tried to get a foreign power to actually do bring up or dig up dirt.
Investigate
an opponent that he's running against for the next presidential elections next year. And I'm like, Nancy, about time, baby girl. About time. You should have done that 6 months ago. But anyway, it's happening. It's officially an inquiry into this man's behavior in the White House, his behavior with other foreign powers. And I'm thinking,
I think just his behavior in general.
In general.
Period.
Anti-democratic mind. And yeah, it was the inquiry that really, the things that really pushed it over the edge to begin the impeachment inquiry was the phone call with the Ukrainian president, but also today that they were saying that
he did the same thing with Australia.
It wasn't him. I think it was Giuliani or Mike Pompeo, who was the Secretary of State or his personal lawyer, who was pressuring the Prime Minister of Australia to also look into the Mueller investigation. So there are more things coming to light that these some six committees within the House of Representatives are going to be digging through while they're on recess. Right now, there's the 2 week recess, so Congress is away, but these committees are going to be very busy.
And you know,
subpoenas went out today too, including Rudy Giuliani got subpoenaed.
Oh God, I wish he just goes down with the ship, all of them. But you know, the interesting thing is that we need to remember that you know, they started these impeachment proceedings. They anticipate that if they find something that is substantial, that we could have an actual impeachment of the president in the House, or at least the articles of impeachment being drawn by November. But the problem is the Senate. So if you're not aware, you can have a president have articles of impeachment drawn against the president and have him impeached in the House, but if the Senate doesn't convict, you cannot remove the president from office. The same thing happened to Bill Clinton back in 1996 when he was going through the whole Monica Lewinsky scandal.
And Andrew Jackson. Those are the only two presidents who were ever impeached.
And so can I just say,
yes.
So SNL did this skit this past weekend.
You were telling me about
this. Yeah. And they have this, I can't remember the name of the sketch, but there's a sketch with Kenan Thompson.
He's so funny.
He's hilarious. And they were talking about the whole impeachment and he would just go, yeah, nothing's going to happen. And then they would say something else. And, yeah, still nothing's going to happen. So then they go back to 2016, right? That's right. And he literally did the same exact thing in 2016 about him getting elected. He's going to win. And then at the end of it, he's like, he's going to be reelected.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, oh, my God. Oh,
we're
God,
doomed now. Thanks, Kenan.
I can't.
It's all your fault.
No, but the thing is that, you know, this is if the articles of impeachment are drawn in the House and they have the numbers, they have on record the number needed to impeach the president so long these articles are drawn up and they find evidence and proof that he did indeed reach out to a foreign power to yet again interfere in our local national elections.
Three things that they have to prove something within these three things: bribery, treason, or high crimes and misdemeanors. So they have to look into that.
We all know there's treason already.
And there's totally going to be some bribery going on.
So, you know,
Kenan.
Something to watch. But
so Kenan also was like, they said something about the whistleblower. And he's like, oh, he going to disappear.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So speaking of that, they just released an article. I can't remember what news organization it was, but the whistleblower is now under federal protection because he fears for his life.
As he should.
That's legal. That's under the Whistleblower Act. Whistleblowers are protected.
Mm-hmm. So it's a very interesting situation. Definitely going to have to watch it. But I will say this. If we finally get there and the House does impeach, it is very imperative that wherever you live, reach out to your senators, especially if they're Republican, and you want your voice heard, because it all hangs on them. If they impeach him in the House and they don't convict in the Senate, we're going to have to deal with this man for the rest of his term now. And if he gets reelected, we'll have to deal with him for another 4 years. So it's do or die, pretty much. So that's that. I just wanted to say that. I hope he gets impeached in both chambers. Anyway, mm-hmm. So do you guys know the term that says, you know, patience is a virtue, right? We mm-hmm. all know that. And we also know that when we wait and when we have patience and when we think about just sitting back and letting things play out, things happen in miraculous and amazing ways. So there's a
story. Are we talking about Bobby again?
Yeah. No. Poor thing.
I love you.
Anyway,
Chris.
So
I hate you so much.
So, you know, it's like you just have to let things just play out, right? So we all know Stacey Dash, right?
Oh God, here we are.
She was one of the actresses on Clueless. I loved her then. But then she started ranting and coming out with all these homophobic things, and she just really was just get rid of her. Just throw her in a bush, get rid of her, disappear, don't come back. It's just beautiful. It's beautiful to see. So anyway, she got arrested recently. She had an altercation with her, I believe, the fourth husband, the 52-year-old.
I'm just reading this.
The 52-year-old actress was taken.
No, 52-year-old failed actress.
Yeah. I was like, how are you missing? I thought that's the part you were laughing at.
That's what I was laughing
exactly.
at.
Yeah, exactly.
The 52-year-old failed actress was taken into custody on Sunday by the Pasco Sheriff's Office in Land O'Lakes.
Make it up.
Is that a place?
Well, I mean, it's Florida, so.
I know. I eat the cheese. I just didn't know it was a place. Just outside of Tampa, according to the police, she slapped a man across the face during a verbal argument. That person ended up being her husband.
Her fourth
husband. But anyway, she ended up getting arrested. And, you know, so I said, you know what? Karma's a bitch. When you're evil and when you're mean and when you are just vindictive and hateful, that feeds your soul, and then you just end up doing shit like this. And all I wanted to say was, you know what? You get what you deserve. You know, stop hating on our community. We are amazing people. We're always doing our thing. We're always trying to make the world a better place. And you know, just to let you know, we do. We're great decorators, great hairdressers, great dancers, great drinkers, great everything. So just, you know, fall the fuck back and don't hate on us, because when you have hate in your heart, this is the shit that happens to you. So anyway, she ended up getting arrested. And I'm just, I feel good about it.
Yeah. Just to throw some hate in her direction.
Of course.
Dash is no friend, as we know, to the LGBTQ plus community. In the past, she called being LGBTQ a choice and said trans people should pee in bushes rather than public restrooms. Go in the bushes, Dash famously quipped on Entertainment Tonight in 2016. I don't know what to tell you, but I'm not going to put my child's life at risk because you want to change a law. Also in 2016, she blamed the Pulse massacre on Barack Obama.
That's right. And, you know, this was actually... We're still living through a whole slew of things that are being blamed on Obama.
Well, also, the guy was white. Like...
and wasn't... What?
The guy that shot wasn't he white?
No, he was Middle Eastern.
Same difference. Not same difference, but he's not African American.
I mean, but this doesn't surprise me. Wasn't it even Ann Coulter? I believe it was Ann Coulter who blamed Hurricane Harvey on Dallas. Was it Dallas or Houston electing a lesbian mayor?
Yes, that's right.
And that's the reason that Hurricane Harvey hit Texas.
I was like, whatever. Ann These Coulter, people are go away.
They Crawl probably think. Hole. And there's a documentary that I really want to check out. I heard about flat. It's about flat earthers. People who
flat, all right.
They really these people are the ones who probably think the fucking Earth is flat. It's a special breed of people.
Yeah, I just say to myself, I'm like, wow. But you know what? It's like I said.
TMZ also reports that Dash is currently being held on a $500 bail. Like, you can't.
$500.
That's
I thought
not...
bail was supposed to be proportionate to how much. Oh, because she doesn't have any money. That's why.
Failed actress.
She's
but
failed
anyway,
actress.
I just wanted to let you guys know that this story was actually published on Query.com. So we want to make sure that we tell people where the story came from. And so. I just say to myself, you know what? Well deserved. Well deserved.
What is going on in Florida, man?
Yeah,
it's Florida. Just,
it's Florida.
Sorry to our Florida listeners.
I know. My mother's leaving. Thank God.
My parents live there, and I'm like, okay, what's going on down there?
I don't know. It's just, it's been a whirlwind 2 weeks. It's like everything is just like, what the hell? Right?
I feel like it's been that way since Trump decided he was going to run for president.
No, Florida's always been terrible. Well, sorry to our Florida listeners.
Well, yeah.
There are positive places in Florida.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are positive places everywhere.
Harry Potter people. World, everyone.
That's right. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So, Nick, listen, you have a story here that you want to talk about. This is going to be a little serious. It'll take us into break, but it needs to be talked about because it is important. So I'm going to toss it over to you.
So we're coming off of Bisexuality Visibility Day. That's and right. I think it's important to note that we lost somebody to suicide because he revealed himself as bisexual to some friends in his high school. So Channing Smith revealed to his friends that he was bisexual. Now his family feels prosecutors won't take action to those who outed him. A Tennessee teenager has died by suicide after classmates outed him on social media. So supposedly Channing Smith was expressing how he feels about his sexuality to certain individuals in his class. Those conversations were then screenshot and shared on social media. And then following that moment, he then reached out to individuals within his class that he found close or thought was close to him, threatening suicide. There was no action taken, no report made by the individuals who received the text message. So yeah, I wanted to highlight this because I think it's really important that we talk about not only social media bullying, but we also talk about how the resources you have and like how you can. There are certain people that you can rely on in your life. There are certain people that you know you can confide in, but you have to be hyper aware, especially in our community, that if you're going to share something so intimate about yourself, especially in a rural small town in Tennessee or any small town in really middle America or anywhere, you have to be really careful what you're sharing because everything gets posted on social media. Mm-hmm. And if you need to have a conversation with somebody, don't text them, call them. They can't screenshot a phone call. They can't put that on Instagram. They can't put that on Facebook. And you can still have that conversation. If you really need to make sure that you're number one, you're looking out for yourself. There are so many different ways to protect yourself. There are so many resources. Mm-hmm. There's Trans Life, the Trans Lifeline, LGBTQ youth for ages 24 and younger, Trevor Project, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. There are so many resources out there. Suicide is not the answer. It's one of the most terrible things to actually face as the victim's family and friends, because it just comes out of the blue.
That's right. And the people that are left behind are the ones that are left suffering, right? It's like you think that you're ending your suffering, and what you don't realize in that moment and when you're thinking of this is that those that are left behind that have to pick up the pieces of what just happened are the ones that suffer. Incredible loss. It stays with them for the rest of their life.
But also, too, at a young age, this individual was 16, I believe. Mm-hmm. At 16, and I hate to say this, but at 16, you don't have the capacity to see past the pain you're currently sitting in, right? Mm-hmm. So you're sitting in this moment where you think your life is over, everything's ruined. Nothing's going to be good in your life anymore. But the reality is, and I know it's been said over and over again on the show, it does get better and there are ways through it. Mm-hmm. And ending your life is not the way to go about it. Sadly, we did lose this individual, and Joshua Smith, his brother, said, "That was my only brother and I loved him." So there are a lot of people you leave behind that you may or may not know would be there and support you. So please, if you're ever feeling this way, one, protect yourself. Don't just share this information with random people. But two, make sure that you do your research. Everybody has some access in some way to the internet. If you don't, go to the library, because if you go to a public library, whether you can get on the computer or not, a librarian can help you and point you in the right direction of where you need to go.
That's right.
There are so many resources out there. So please, please, please share this story and talk about this story, because we cannot continue to lose people to suicide anymore. It's just it's just ridiculous. We're at a place where we should really be moving forward and flourishing and supporting one another, and people are so scared about the fact that somebody killed themselves because they're bisexual or potentially gay or whatever. In 2019, it's just flooring to me. I mean, and it happens all the time.
It does. And there is stuff that also can be done about it. You did make a comment saying that suicide comes out of the blue, and that's not necessarily true. Many times it does, but many times there are signs. For instance, he reached out to someone.
Right. We talked about that.
And it's so important that if someone is expressing these feelings to you, you have to take them seriously, because this girl that he was talking to on the phone, you know, when he said he was going to kill himself, maybe she didn't believe him. But it's you can't be like a bystander. Like, you have to take these things seriously and reach out to someone, you know, because I'm not blaming this woman at all, but perhaps his life could have been saved if she had reached out to someone and said, "Hey, I'm really afraid of my friend. He's seeming very upset."
Yeah.
And now it got us into this situation, which is absolutely terrible. And even going forward, the district attorney, Craig Northcott, who has voiced opposition to gay rights in the past and said gay people are not entitled to domestic violence, he said he hasn't even decided if he's going to pursue criminal charges for the people who brought this man to death. Now, remember that a young man from, I believe, Massachusetts, whose girlfriend convinced him to kill himself, and he did. And she was facing criminal charges. There should be an investigation, and these people should be held responsible for what drove him to do what he did.
And they're not even considering it at this point.
At this point, he hasn't decided, but they absolutely should be held responsible.
And they absolutely should
start and be brought to justice. Absolutely,
and you know, let that play out in a court of law, because it's just really sad. Mm-hmm. And one thing I wanted to point out too, if you're listening to the show and you're a young person, you know, we had a 16-year-old reach out to us, and we omitted names, etc. But you know, he reached out. He had concerns. He was going to school. He was a high schooler. Thankfully, he so far has had a good experience. But if you're young and you're listening to our show, we live in 2019. We're in the United States of America. And today, in all 50 states, same-sex couples can get married. It does get better. You have choices. You have options. Reach out to people. As Nick said, you know, if you have questions about our community or your community or where you think you fit, there is, I guarantee you, in every state, at least one LGBT center that you can reach out to. And there's someone on the end of that line that's willing to sit with you and talk with you and say, this is what our lifestyle is like. This is what our life is like. This is what our community is like. Get your information. Get informed from people who have lived it, who has been there, who has struggled along with all of us. It is available. And think about what you're leaving behind.
But also, there's like a huge part of this that's like a call to adult parents. Like,
absolutely.
This person is 16. They're not 18. They're not a legal adult. That's beside the point. But what you need to monitor this bullshit. I'll never forget. I don't think I've ever shared this story on the show before, but when I was coming out of the closet and when I was coming to terms with who I was, I had a lot of shit at home, and we all know that. But there was this one day I broke down. I like broke down, and I was on the like, and I wasn't doing good in school. I had a lot of stuff going on in my life, and I was collapsed on the couch in my living room, uncontrollably crying. And that was the one time before my dad got really, he's much better now, but before that, my dad was, he finally fucking tuned in. He was like, there is something wrong with my son. I don't know what's going on. And he sat with me and he held me until I stopped crying. I couldn't describe to him what was going on in my life, but he knew I needed support. Mm-hmm. And as a parent, you have to clock these things with your kids. And nowadays with social media, there are ways to track what the fuck is going on. You have to be aware of what's going on, especially with cyberbullying. I mean, it's getting out of control. It's really getting out of control.
I almost feel like parents have to sort of kind of play 007, like create a fake Facebook account and befriend your child and pretend you're like a schoolmate just so that you can monitor what they're doing online and see and sort of kind of get an idea of what interactions your children are having on social media.
And as much as it might piss off your kid or make them angry because they're going through their, you know, hormonal stages, give them the resources. If their school doesn't have the resources, provide those resources. Reach out and find those resources for those kids. Then go to your fucking school and say, you need to provide these resources for our fucking kids because this is what's happening. And we could have lost this person, and we actually did lose this person.
And so, most importantly, is talk to the kids.
Yeah.
Like, just ask your kid how he's doing. Sometimes, you know, a lot of times in high school, my parents had no idea what was going on with me. Yeah. They thought I was the easy kid. I was the baby. They thought I was the easiest one.
Honey, you're not even easy as an adult.
But it's really imperative that, you know, you just talk to the kids. Just ask how they're doing, you know. And chances are, if you just keep an open line of communication, that they are going to start opening up. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I wanted to add, we had mentioned the Trans Lifeline. We had mentioned Trevor Project Lifeline the trevorproject.org. Well, when it comes to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, you don't even need to wait till it's that moment where you're about to act, or you think you're about to act. If you have those thoughts, or you're really, really down and you keep just thinking about this and you just need someone to talk to, they're there. They're there 24/7 for That's you right. just to talk to them. And they are more than happy to do anything they can. So you don't need to wait until it's the last moment. If you have the thoughts, you can just call these people and they will always be there to talk to you.
Right. And beyond that too, right? You not only if you're having these thoughts or you think you're going to commit suicide, if you're a parent, if you're an individual that's struggling with sexuality, if you're struggling with anything, they're not just there for suicide prevention. They're there to provide resources for people that are trying to find themselves, or for parents who are trying to figure out how to support their kid. Mm-hmm. There have been implemented resources to prevent stuff like this from happening. And unfortunately, because of the situation and because of the location and because there wasn't enough communication, we lost somebody.
That's right.
And a lot of times, I guess that wasn't my last thing. A lot of times it is the bystander effect. So many people think, well, I'm sure someone else is going to say something.
Yeah, no. You see something, say something, because chances are someone else hasn't had an opportunity to do that.
That's the bystander effect. You think Nick's going to say it, Nick thinks I'm going to say it, and I think you're going to say it, and no one says it.
That's right.
No, you're right. And that, I mean, that goes for not only parents, but students as well.
Exactly.
Like, it is imperative. Even if somebody's joking about it, whether they're gay or straight, it doesn't matter. You have the responsibility, I don't care what age you are, to say something to somebody if somebody is threatening their own life or threatening other people's lives.
Yes, absolutely.
And I know that this is such a very sensitive topic, and we would love to get, you know, to more of it, and perhaps after our interview, but we do need to go to break because we have a guest coming on. Mason Funk was going to join us. He is the author of The Book of Pride. So we're going to leave you with some music, and when we come back, we have the author, Mason Funk, with us, joining us. Thank you.
It's hard to see you with a man you call your friend, but in the end, I know I don't have much time to tell you why I wanna die, but then I cry, so then I lie, so I don't make you bend time. 'Cause if you wanted me to move, you know I would, because I'm good at making you love me. And if I said I needed more than I came for, would you ignore me making you love me? So baby, I'm not afraid to too, cause I have lost my mind. Wondering why, cause everybody's on my side about you and I. Making our love intertwined, but baby, this is goodbye. Cause if you
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, from the break. That was Time by the incredible Pat Riley. And joining us now is author Mason Funk. He is the author of The Book of Pride. We've been trying to get him on the show for like the past 6 weeks. Scheduling didn't work out, but we finally got him on the show. We're super excited. The book is sitting right here on our desk. It is amazing. Welcome, Mason.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
It is absolutely our pleasure. I understand that you're in California, correct? In LA?
That's right. I'm here in Los Angeles on the 35th floor of a skyscraper.
Nice. We're in a stuffy basement.
Yeah.
It's actually exactly. It's actually quite comfortable here.
You kept emailing me today, 4:10 p.m. and I'm like, 7:10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you're like, yeah, no, 4:10. I'm like, yeah.
4:10
no.
Real people time.
Okay,
right.
Got it. I got it.
So anyway, I would like to officially welcome you to the show. Thank you so much for, first of all, writing this and joining us to talk about this amazing book. I would like for you, if you can, tell us a little bit about yourself and then tell us a little bit about why you wrote the book, and then we can jump into our interview.
Awesome.
But before that, hi, I'm Chris. I was like, you know these two.
Actually, he doesn't.
And I'm Tom.
Oh. I'm Nick.
Okay, great.
Great. All right.
Did you have a comment there, or you want me to jump in?
Jump in.
Okay. So I was born and raised actually here in Los Angeles. One of the few people who was born and raised here and actually lives here. I left, so I was a typical, what I oftentimes say, I was a typical terrified gay teenager, and this was in the 1970s. My family was conservative. I was raised in the church. I was a good kid in every respect, except of course I was carrying this what seemed at the time terrible secret, which was increasingly I knew I was gay. I had to essentially get as far away from LA, I think, as possible to find myself. So this took me to Northern California for college, and then Washington State, the state of Maine, and then all the way to Europe for 7 years, which all of which was a kind of a long, long drawn out way of discovering who I was and also coming to terms with not only being gay, but being happy as a gay man. I came back to LA at the age of 35, worked in nonfiction television and documentary film for about 20 years. And one of my favorite things in my work was always interviewing people. That was essentially the first step in creating any program, whether it was for the Discovery Channel, the Learning Channel, Animal Planet, whatever it might be. It was you go and you get the interviews, and then you build the program around that. So I knew that I really loved this process. I also loved taking crazy road trips to far-flung places to find these people, whether it was Alaska or the Gulf of Mexico. So all this came together about 5 years ago. I woke up in the middle of the night. I was, for some reason, just turning over in my mind essentially my whole life and kind of taking the question of how did I get from that gay, terrified teenager to where I am today, asleep next to my legally married husband with a happy and fulfilling life. And I knew that not only had I taken this journey, but that there were countless people around the country who were responsible for the creation of the LGBTQ civil rights movement and the creation of our community. And kind of like a bolt of lightning, I said, I want to create a project to run around and capture their stories. I was convinced that somebody else was always doing this because it's not exactly an out-of-the-box idea. It's pretty straight ahead, straightforward, no pun intended. But when I began digging around, the best there existed were oral history projects that were incredibly well-intentioned, but the means of production were not always very good. In other words, the cameras were poor quality, the direction was sometimes lacking, and the diversity. What does that mean?
I'm talking about production quality.
All the time, 24/7 production quality. And what was also missing was the diversity. You know, you take the letters in our acronym, LGBTQ, and any others you want to add, but frequently oral history projects only seem to focus on one part of our community.
Right.
And I wanted to create what I sort of thought of as a comprehensive portrait of the people who built our community from scratch. What's more, they did a lot of this heavy lifting prior to the internet, so they oftentimes didn't even know what each other was doing. So I set off. It took a couple years to raise enough money to launch. And 3 years ago in the summer of 2016, we hit the road. We recorded our first 44 interviews around the country. And in the meantime, due to a stroke of good fortune, namely my husband's college roommate being the publisher at Harper One, he said, "Do you want to do a book?" I was like, "Sure, sounds good to me. I haven't shot any interviews yet. Is that okay?" And he said, "That's okay. You'll get them done." So that contract with HarperCollins, Harper One, helped to fund a large number of our interviews. And I hit the road. And 3 years later, the book came out. And I told HarperCollins, "Look, the 50th anniversary of Stonewall is coming up in June 2019. That would be the perfect time to launch the book." And that's what happened.
Right.
Amazingly, the best laid plans actually came true.
So tell that's me a awesome. Little bit about, I mean, you have some of the most amazing people in this book that have been a part of our community. How did you go about choosing who you wanted to actually interact with in an interview?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't systematic. It wasn't methodical. It wasn't scientific, to be sure. I had a couple of people who knew people all over the country. One of them was a historian. I want to give a shout out to her. Her name is Lillian Faderman. And in 2016, she published a big book called The Gay Revolution, a big history of our community. And I went through that book like my Bible, highlighting names, and then got in touch with Lillian. And she connected me to people all over the country. Similarly, there was a guy who worked in the Obama White House as one of President Obama's LGBT liaisons. His name was Gautam Raghavan. And he, too, had tentacles all over the country. So he also connected me. And that's kind of how it all started. And then, you know, the internet, digging around, yeah. Like, if I was going to a specific location, because someone said you have to go interview that person, then I would begin digging around and our team would begin digging and we would find other people with the goal always, if we were going to Texas or if we were going to, I'm looking up this way because I have a map on my wall. If I was going to Texas or Michigan, if I had one person who sort of fit this category, then who else could we interview that would kind of create a little bit of a rounded picture?
So speaking of categories, in the book you have categories, exactly. Disruptors, spirit, survival, bridges, words, truth to power. Do you want to speak a little bit about how you categorize these people and what does that mean?
Well, so those categories came very late. Never did I have these categories in mind as I was heading out. But when it came time to deliver the book to HarperCollins, which was about a year-long process of editing all of our interviews down to find the right mix of people and the right stories from each person, the question arose, well, how do you, what order do you put them in?
Right.
You could have done alphabetical, which is boring. You could have done geographical, similarly. I mean, that could have been okay. You could have done chronological, eh. But I sort of started thinking of, I don't know why, I just had a big bulletin board with lots of white cards, and I wrote their names on a white card. And I just began kind of moving them around. You know, clearly writers, for example, people who dealt with words, who advanced our community, you know, via the written word. That could be a writer, or that could be an English teacher. Spirit, you know, that could be people who came from a faith tradition like myself, or Troy Perry, who created the Metropolitan Community Church, or people who somehow, I don't know, use the spiritual realm, if you want to say that, to fortify our community. That was another example. Disruptors were clearly people who kind of had an agenda to just shake things up.
Yep.
And the categories in the book just sort of took shape. I thought of them as dinner parties. Like, how fun would it be to be at a dinner party with this group of people?
Right.
And how fun would it be to watch them talk to each other? Because, you know, as you know, in our community, not everybody agrees with everybody else.
That's right.
So they would have lively dinner table conversations, and I would just be a fly on the wall in my mind listening to them talk.
So the structure of this book, it's literally you go individual by individual, somebody that's impacted the community in some way. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit about just how you structured the book itself?
Well, again, it was a question of sort of looking at, we've captured 133 interviews. And I should mention out loud, of course, that the project behind the book is called Outwards. And that's spelled OUTWORDS, Outwards. And the name of our website is theoutwardsarchive.org. That's theoutwardsarchive.org. So we've captured a total of 133 interviews nationwide. And then it was just a question of, like, how do you boil it down? If we tried to include everybody in the book, it would have been a phone book.
Now, you're the executive director of Outwards, correct?
Exactly. So that's essentially, I created Outwards first, appointed myself executive director. We incorporated as a 501c3. I hired myself as executive director. And in the meantime, the book was taking shape. These two things were happening simultaneously. But one thing, of course, that I really love to emphasize to people in conversations like this is that the book is really only the first offering of the Outwards Archive. The project is much bigger and is ongoing.
So I have two things I want to ask you before I stop monopolizing this conversation, like I normally do.
Yeah.
So first of all, I want to ask what your favorite or most impactful interview was with when you were going through this process. And then also, I would love to talk a little bit about the photography in this book. I mean, some of the photos are so powerful. When I was just scrolling through it when we first received it, it brought tears to my eyes to see all the history of our community in this book.
Yeah. Well, asking me to name a favorite interview is kind of like asking parents to name their favorite child.
Well, my parents always said me, so that was easy for them.
Well, that's good. Me too, for the record. In spite of being the gay son. But, it, you know, I sometimes flip through the book when I do book readings, for example. I vary it from reading to reading, depending, for example, on where the location of this event is. So I'll read stories, you know, that are kind of closely associated with that particular city or state. I have so many. I think one that always comes to mind, because there was this smallish movement within our community way back in the 70s, primarily. They called themselves lesbian separatists. So these were women who were fighting for women's rights. They were fighting for the right to be openly lesbian. Frequently, they were also women of color. And they, you know, at a certain point, they were like, you know what, we are not going to get very far by kind of beating our heads against the wall with regard to sort of the traditionally male-dominated society at that time. We're going to go off and we're going to create communities of our own to strengthen our own lives and our own communities. And so two women in the book, one is named Lamar Van Dyke in Seattle, and the other is named Diana Rivers in Arkansas in the Ozarks. I loved their stories. I loved how honest they were. I mean, the stories of trying to create these communities were full of trials and tribulations. You know, we're human beings and we fight with each other and we argue about this, that, and the other thing. And they certainly did, but they created these communities of women that have endured to this day. So the fact that they were, for a certain period of time, they wouldn't even talk to a man, much less let a man come to interview them. Mm-hmm. But times have changed. These women have grown older and have maybe softened some of their more militant points of view. And they let me to come interview them.
Do you think?
And I found that incredibly fascinating and inspiring. Mm-hmm.
Do you think this book, besides providing history to the LGBTQ plus community, also bridges gaps? I mean, the way you're speaking about these women, it's like they finally let you into their lives, and now we're kind of seeing the community umbrella itself instead of you know being insular,
partitioned.
Yes.
I mean, one of my primary missions for this project and this book, I guess you could say, were two things. One was to allow the incredible diversity of opinion within our community to exist,
right,
and to be fully acknowledged, and to not have to all walk in lockstep, you know, holding the exact same positions. But number two, to build a greater sense of community and appreciation throughout our community. We have experienced and we have actually propagated discrimination within our own community, whether that was against people of color or less educated people or people who lived in the big city when we were rural, or people who lived in rural areas if we lived in big cities. We are not immune to discrimination with our own community. And I heard comments along the way and experienced this. When I was in the South, I had an Asian American director of photography with me shooting the interviews, running the camera. And we were in the South, and frankly, people there are not as woke with regard to stereotypes of Asian Americans as you might hope they were. And so I had a Chinese American director of photography with me who was asked by one of our interview subjects, not with malintent at all, but he said, well, he didn't ask her. He told her, well, we have sushi restaurants here in our town.
Right.
And I overheard this and I went like this. And she told me later, like, that's the kind of microaggression that we experience that no one intends to say or do, but they come through.
Right.
So I hope that this project is helping to illuminate and educate us internally towards greater tolerance, greater appreciation of our diversity, and not just staying always in our own lane and not just sticking with our own type, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I have a question for you. So there's many, many heroes that we've had in our community over the decades, you know, since Stonewall. Many people have stepped up. We did a series called the LGBT Spotlight Series, and where we talked about certain individuals that are very, you know, well known in our community that did a lot of really good work, like Harvey Milk and a lot of other people. But on the back of it, first of all, your book cover is amazing.
And Rainbows
Everywhere. Everything for us, and especially for Nick. But on the back of your book, you picked five specific quotes from five specific people or heroes in our community. And I wanted to talk about I wanted to read one first of all, but I also wanted to talk about the reason why you've chosen these five. Do they have any specific meaning for you? Do they strike you in a specific way? But the first one that you have,
one sec.
I think he's grabbing the book.
He said,
"I just have to have a copy."
There it is.
All right. So the first one.
Carry on.
You have here. Coming out cost me my career and gave me my integrity. That was Greth Kammermeyer, a retired Army colonel, and he was a "Don't Ask, Don't Tell" activist. There obviously are many others. I'm sure that there's a lot of quotes in this book. Why these specific five? Why did you choose this to grace your book?
Yeah, it was a really interesting conversation between me. By the way, credit for the cover honestly goes to HarperCollins. They brought it to me. So I just want to give a shout out to them. They were nothing short of amazing when it came to supporting this book, loving this book, and really wanting this book to be absolutely everything it could be. So the question came, what quotes will we put on the back cover? If you'll look, you'll notice that, among other things, we included a trans person, the third quote down, Kyler Brodus, a bisexual pioneer, Lani Kaahumanu, and three others, including Mark Siegel, Adebayo, and Greta Kammermeyer. Again, even if it was only five quotes, I wanted to make sure that we were indicating to people that this is a book with space for everyone. And not only space for everyone, but a book that celebrates everyone. The bisexual community, as you know, has not traditionally gotten a lot of love within the LGBT community. They had to fight for inclusion within this community when the community was just the lesbian and gay community. Yep. For example, in the historic 1993 March on Washington,
that's right,
the bisexual community had to fight to get their name included in the name of the march because a lot of lesbian and gay people were suspicious. So I give full credit to that community for not for refusing to be sidelined and saying we are part of you and we want to share our stories with you and we are activists in our own right. And at the same time, we want to hold on to our own unique identities. Mm-hmm. So that's why this particular set of quotes came together. I can't exactly tell you why Greta. Adebayo is a Cuban-American immigrant. I wanted to highlight the fact that we have people of color, women of color in this book, along with Kyler Brodus, who's African-American. Again, just trying to paint, even if it's only five people, a quick little portrait of the diversity in our community.
So this was obviously well thought out. You wanted to make sure that, first of all, the message of the book was, here we are, here's our unsung heroes, here are the people that have impacted our community. But you also wanted to make sure that in the process, you were including all of our entire community and not just, you know, focusing on one aspect of that.
Exactly.
And with that being said, I think it's really great that one of the quotes back here from Greta Kammermeyer, especially what's going on now with the Trump administration, with the transgender ban, this is someone who's served, was a Army colonel. This is someone who served so gallantly for our nation. And this can be an inspiration of hope to say, like, you know, like it says, coming out cost me my career, but gave me my integrity. So it's saying this Army colonel being true to their self, it showed them that, you know, who they really are. And it can be so inspirational for those who are facing discrimination or losing their positions to fight for our nation. So I think that can be incredibly impactful for people in our armed forces at the moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah.
So now more than ever, we're starting to see schools around the nation and colleges teach more of LGBTQ plus history.
Right.
Have you and do you hope to see this in schools being taught? You know, have you had people reach out to you about bringing this into their curriculum?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the really cool things that's happening right now is, as you probably know, four states to date mm-hmm. have passed legislation mandating LGBTQ history in their junior high school and high school curriculums. And that is a really exciting opportunity for us to bring these stories in, provide content for schools and teachers. You know, imagine 11th grade American history teacher. He or she or they may have sort of zero connection to the LGBTQ community and to our history. But suddenly it's like, okay, now's the unit when we have to teach this subject matter.
Right.
So we have not only the book, but on our platform, on a digital platform, which I mentioned is theoutwardsarchive.org, we have a whole host of short, edited, mini documentaries. They're so short, you can't really call them a documentary. Sometimes just 2 to 3 minutes long, where we take an individual voice. By the way, I want to get to your question about the photographs.
Yeah, I was waiting for that.
But we have these little featurettes where you just hear from one person with a couple of stories from their life, with some photographs and some music just to embellish it and really drive home the impact. And these clips are ready made for use in schools. Right. You know, young people respond much better to, you know, something video, a YouTube story, as opposed to say something they have to read. I don't mean to generalize, but frequently.
Yeah.
So we are super excited to distribute these stories and disseminate them to youth.
Before we get into the photos, because I know we really want to talk about it, I just want to dive a little bit more into the education piece. Do you sure. think, because this is a subject that hasn't been taught necessarily in schools around the nation, that authors like yourself can't not just deliver this book to a school, but have to go and have how do you get teachers to actually teach this and portray it appropriately to the students?
Good question. I mean, clearly, obviously, I and my team cannot be there in every single high school around America when this information comes up. We're working on partnerships with a couple of national LGBT-focused educational organizations to build lesson plans so that when the material, when the story is presented in the classroom, the teacher is not at a loss, like, well, what do we say? What do we do? You have questions for further thought, further consideration. You have topics for further discussion so that hopefully this content arrives ready-made. And we're also gradually working on the possibility of forming partnerships with textbook publishers.
Right.
So that they can, because they frequently these days, beyond distributing actual hardcover textbooks, they also send out materials digitally.
Right.
So this is another way that we can not only provide the stories, which are so important, as you know, there's nothing more powerful than a story to just shift somebody's perspective or to open their eyes or their heart.
But beyond
so we're hoping to provide the stories and then also provide the surrounding materials to create essentially an opportunity for an amazing lesson plan.
And just to go with that, I'm sorry, I think that's really important that you're going to work with partnerships with textbook companies, because so many of the history books that I have that I used in high school or I'm using now in college and I'm working to become a teacher myself, they would put some LGBT issues or events that took place, but they were so brief and so minuscule and the teachers never touched on it. So I think working with the textbook companies is incredibly imperative.
Yeah, I mean, I probably don't even realize how teachers, they sort of, it might be in the textbook, but they might say, we don't have time for that.
Right.
We're going to go on to the Civil War or whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's complicated too, because you're going to build a curriculum, you're going to potentially, hopefully, give this book to schools. And I know as a kid, if I were to be in a history class and this book was given to me, there would have been an emotional roller coaster for me. There would have been, oh my God, I finally see myself. I finally see representation, right? But then you have other kids in this school or in this area that might, they're going to have additional training. They're going to have training about hate speech and how to handle different reactions in the classroom. I mean, this is such a huge topic that we're just starting to dive into.
Right. Well, you do have to remember there was a day where four black kids walked into an all white school, you know, so there is going to be that shock effect for some people.
Yeah.
I just think that overall, I mean, we're talking about a book that was put together to really highlight some of the heroes in our community that went that extra mile.
You saw we're on the last page, right?
Are we? I was like, stop. No, seriously, I would have been so like, I mean, it would have been an amazing feeling to discover that, but no, we're not on the last page. So the thing is, you know, all of this came together. We're highlighting all these amazing individuals that did awesome things for our community to put our community out there. In 50 years from now, when we're looking back at history and we're looking back at the moment in time and we're currently four states are now going to be teaching LGBTQ history and then it's the law of the land and we're reading books like this, do you think that 50 years from now someone's going to say, hey, listen, you guys need to learn about or hear about Mason Funk, who wrote a book and at the time took the time to put all of these stories together. And eventually, at some point, all of this stuff started being taught in school and our community flourished and our community got to a point in time in where all of us are seen in a way that we've never seen before. Do you think about things like that when you're doing a project like this, or even when you're working with the Outward project itself?
The short answer is no. Okay.
Because
I don't really think. I guess there's so many day to day considerations that are so much more pressing right now that to think that somehow 50 years from now someone might say, "Oh, Mason Funk did X, Y, and Z." I mean, if that's the outcome, of course, I'll be long gone by then. That would be amazing. But in some ways, I still hope they're going to hearken back even further, skip past me, go back to the people who by that point will look to us like Abraham Lincoln. You know, we look back 150 years after the Civil War. We still go to Abraham Lincoln, you know, or people like him who essentially changed the tide of our entire nation. I hope that people 50 years from now, that much further removed from the people in this book, will still be looking back, because those were the people who, you know, who risked their lives.
Pretty much.
Who risked going to jail, who risked getting fired, who were in bars that got raided, who saw their names and the names of their friends published the next day in the newspaper, in major newspapers across the country. This was normal. Who risked being committed to a mental institution, a psychiatric institution, because they were gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender. Honestly, I feel like I hope 50 years from now, people will just have that much more appreciation. I'm not being self-deprecating, but I just think that what I've had to face has been relatively mild compared to what these individuals faced on our behalf.
Right.
I agree.
So I guess before we move on to have you plug the book and where they can find it, tell us a little bit about the photographs, because, wow, they're powerful.
Well, you know, that was an exciting labor of love. When you make any program for television or a documentary film, of course, photographs or footage are they're the lifeblood of your program. And so in my initial relationship with HarperCollins, the contract said something like 1 to 2 personal photographs per subject. So you have in each section, for each subject, you have a portrait at the end, mm-hmm. which is a photograph that we took of our subjects on the day of the interview. But then we have the photographs from their lives that take us further back. That was, we literally had someone on staff, not full-time, part-time, whose entire job was gathering these photographs from our subjects. Because our subjects, I should mention, are mostly in their 70s and 80s. One of the urgent parts of this project is trying to get to these people before they pass away. 4 people in the book, I should mention, have passed away since we interviewed them. So, but as a result, these folks are older. They're not up to speed, you know, sometimes with things like, you know, digital images. Their photographs are like in a box somewhere. Right. Mm-hmm. They don't understand what 300 DPI means. And they certainly might not know what a thumb drive is.
Right.
And we need them to send us their photographs. If they try emailing them, the email server automatically down-reses the photographs and we can't use them. So it was a whole labor of love. Literally every single person, like the photographs coming in. But when they came, it was like Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa. Because we would open it up and sometimes they had gathered 50 photographs and they were incredible. And they had these captions that told when the photograph was taken. Mm-hmm. Let me pick one, for example. Let's see here. Continuing to look. Oh, Mike on page 82, Michael Hickerson performing at the 20th anniversary ball of the crew of Amon-Ra in New Orleans. This is a huge deal. And the photograph shows him dressed up like Strawberry Shortcake. When that photograph came to us, you know, it's just like you might as well just break out the tequila and the, you know, the popcorn, because these photographs are such a gift. And so it was incredibly time consuming. Literally, like I say, God bless Molly Underwood, our archival assistant, calling people, talking them through the process of getting their photographs digitized and getting them into our hands. But it was, as you say, it makes the book come alive.
Yeah, there was, you know, like the stories are so important and so beautiful, and you can connect to them, and they're you know, they're intense, they're beautiful, they're strong, they're people's lives. But when you see those photos, it's like it makes it real for you, and it's like, oh, this has been and is our history, and it literally does, like you said, it makes the book come to life, and I can't say it enough. Like the photos are like
it's
incredible.
Literally the three dimensions of the human being able to take in you know a story, right? Mm-hmm. You've got the written word, you've got the visual effects, and then you've got the emotions that are you feel behind the way things are written and the interviews are had. It's a trifecta of being able to really understand what you're looking at, right? And it's just amazing.
Yeah. And let me mention that on our digital platform at theoutwardsarchive.org, there we have the capacity. So what you'll find there, I don't know if you're able to like put that up on the screen here, but theoutwardsarchive.org.
We'll put it on our post.
Okay, great. So the platform is a place where we are able to upload the entire interview from each subject, the entire transcript, and as many photographs as we want. So the beauty of the platform is you may get one or two or three photographs from a given subject in the book, but when the platform is complete, which is an ongoing work of progress, you'll have every single photo that the person sent in. It could be 15, 20 photos with captions. And the other cool thing about the platform, real quick, is that it's searchable. So if you live in Indiana or if you live in Tennessee and you're wondering, well, does anybody in this platform talk about Indiana or Tennessee? Are they from there? Did they ever go there? You can type whatever word you choose in a search window. It'll pull up every single time that anybody in the archive has said that word.
Wow.
And then you can read and kind of get the context. And if you want to watch, you can click on that word and it'll take you to the corresponding video.
Wow.
So this is one of our big offerings to the community, because whereas a book costs $24.99 retail, the platform is entirely free. It's like a big library that you can walk into as many times as you want and stay as long as you want and come back as many times as you want.
That's truly amazing.
Awesome. That is
so
awesome.
So is there a – did you have something?
It's a photograph thing, so I just wanted to touch on it before you move. I was just flipping through after you were talking about the photo on page 82, and I got to page 148, and this is about Susan Griffin. And the photo of Susan, Alice Walker, and Whoopi Goldberg being arrested in an apartheid protest in 1985, and they could not look any happier.
It's
absolutely amazing. They're like, yep, we did this for a good cause. I love that I flipped right to that page.
That's so awesome.
So normally we ask our authors if they have a specific small segment they want to read. If not, you can just go ahead and plug yourself and plug the book and where the people can find it.
How much time do we have? I mean, I'll keep it short, but literally how much time do we have?
Whatever you need.
Yep.
Okay. Obviously, I didn't prepare for this, but let me flip a little bit here.
We have a tendency to do that to people. It's surprise, read.
I'm on my toes.
Welcome to Gay Talk.
Okay, I'm going to read a section. It's from Richard Zaldivar. Richard Zaldivar is an LA, Los Angeles, Latino activist. He founded an organization called The Wall Las Memorias here in Los Angeles. Initially, it was to build a monument to people from the Latino community who had passed away of HIV/AIDS. That was the first ever federally funded AIDS monument in the country. And that organization continues to this day, providing services to HIV positive and men, people with AIDS, most primarily in the Latino community here in Los Angeles. So Richard tells the story of how he gathered community support to build this monument. And this little section is called Walk Forward, Free of Intimidation. In 1993, I was overseeing the city's summer youth employment program, where nonprofits would get jobs for disadvantaged young people. Many of them were very creative, and they painted some of the greatest murals on the east side of Los Angeles. I thought Latinos didn't understand or accept the fact that HIV/AIDS was their issue. It was always white gay men from the west side of town. I figured they needed to own the epidemic. What better way than to create an opportunity for artists to paint murals from the community so that the community participates and develops their own idea of what HIV/AIDS is and have a greater conversation about it? The idea was to paint a large mural of the Virgin Mary somewhere on the east side of Los Angeles and then have 200 names of people who died from AIDS. I brought together a committee, and it included a few Catholic priests. And one of them said, Richard, you don't need one wall. You need a monument, and you can do it, and the community deserves it. In 1993, on World AIDS Day, we founded the organization. Within months, there was an architectural rendering for this monument. I said, okay, I don't know how we're going to do this, but we're going to do it. We organized the community, which included faith folks, people from churches, politicians, union leaders, LGBTQ people, residents, Hispanic celebrities. One of the first organizations I went out to was a group called the Mothers of East Los Angeles. I knew the president of the group. I went with Ron Castillo, one of my board members at the time, to meet with their board. Ron was living with AIDS. We sat down and gave them HIV 101. Ron talked about his situation as a person living with AIDS, and then I asked them for their support. I'll never forget. We're meeting at a dining room table, and on the wall was a picture of the Virgin of Guadalupe. I saw all these women, and I thought, I know I want to do this, but what happens if there's any rejection? How do I respond to that? One of the older women kept nodding her head as we were talking about this, and I said, oh my God, she's really going to shoot us down. She's probably getting really angry. She was the first one to say, I support this. I learned about HIV/AIDS because I watch the Christina show all the time. Mm-hmm. That was like the Ellen of the day.
That's right.
The women voted unanimously. And with that, I went to all the other churches and other institutions, and I said, the Mothers of East Los Angeles support us building an AIDS monument here on the east side of Los Angeles. Will you? That worked. That worked so well. We had a few death threats. It was a painful time and a challenging time, but it was also a great time because it taught us how to walk through it very focused. Just walk forward, free of intimidation, because we knew what we had to do.
Wow.
That's amazing.
That is powerful.
And you're right when you say Christina was one of the biggest, you know, talk show hosts in the Latino community. I mean, right. Her show spanned over 20 seasons on Univision. It's incredible. And I watched her growing up, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And some of the topics that she took on were never kosher topics. It was always something hot, and she knew how to push buttons and knew how to interview people and do things that was so I could see this. I can literally picture this in my mind because I'm making a connection between his story and what I know about this woman.
Right.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. She strikes me, for that matter, and this, of course, is not part of my cultural background, but for her to be willing to bring on people with HIV/AIDS on her show and treat them with dignity and compassion and let them have a voice. She's someone who ultimately should be in the Book of Pride because she sounds like she's been an amazing ally for us.
Yeah, she's done many wonderful things for a lot of communities. Like I said, she was never shy from taking on anything as far as a topic for her show. Growing up, there was so much that I learned from things that I wasn't familiar with watching her show. So it's just the connection is amazing.
Yeah, you and a lot of other people, as it turns out, because this woman said, yeah, I know about this. And probably because Christine was willing to talk about it respectfully, this woman said, okay, it's okay for me to be compassionate as well.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
So Mason, tell us, please, where can our listeners find you, find your book, find everything? Just give us the plugs.
Okay. Well, first of all, I've said it about 50 times, but I'll say it again. The platform, our website, is called theoutwardsarchive.org. Theoutwardsarchive.org. We are a 501c3. I want to mention that. We absolutely, absolutely depend on the support of the community to help us keep going. As for the book, you can find it online. You can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. If you go to our website, theoutwardsarchive.org, there's a button you can click on called The Book of Pride, and that'll give you a total of 4 online booksellers where you can buy the book. And so I want to say one quick plug for Amazon. A lot of people use Amazon reviews to determine whether they're going to buy a book or not. So if you buy the book on Amazon, which is not a requirement, but a possibility, please go on back and write us a review because that helps drive sales. Or if you want to keep independent booksellers alive and well in our country, then just go down to your local bookstore. Chances are they carried the book during June of this year, Pride Month, but they might still have it on their shelves. And if not, of course, they'll be happy to order it from you. But you can basically find it anywhere in the universe that you find books. You'll find the Book of Pride.
That's right.
Wonderful.
All right. Amazing. Well, listen, I want to personally thank you on behalf of the cast, myself and Chris and Nick, for joining us. I know that we were bouncing around some dates and we had originally scheduled this interview four or five weeks ago. But I'm super happy that you finally joined us, told us about this amazing creation that you and your team have done. I can't think of a better choice for someone who's learning about our community to pick up this book, or someone who's just discovering themselves to pick up this book and read it. Mm-hmm. and familiarize yourself with some of the people that paved the way for you to be able to be who you are today so openly and so freely. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Let me mention one more thing also on social media, because we are literally on the eve of LGBT History Month starting tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And we'll be posting every single day during LGBT History Month. So you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at The Outwards Archive. So find us on Facebook and Instagram. Follow our posts during October LGBT History Month. Like us, of course. Send us your comments. Tell us who we should interview. Because like I say, this is just the beginning. We have only really just begun. We've only been in 26 states. That means there are 24 states to go. Did I do that right? 24. we've got a long ways to go. So to your listeners, please find us on Facebook at The Outwards Archive, on Instagram at The Outwards Archive, and tell us what you think, like our posts, and please reach out. We are happy to hear from folks.
That's amazing.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Well, once again, thank you so much for joining us. If you have anything that you're working on that you want to come back and join us at some point in time and talk about, you have an open invitation to sit with us here on the show anytime.
Yep. You're part of the Gay Talk family.
Thank you so much. Real pleasure spending time with you. And thank you all for doing the show.
Yeah. Likewise.
Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was author Mason Funk, of course. He is the author of the book of... Right here.
Pride.
Make sure Google that you
Pride.
Get it. It's amazing. we are going to make sure that we have all the links for the book. You can find this book pretty much anywhere, as he said. We're going to make sure we have all the links on tonight's post. We encourage that you get it because it's a good thing. We're going to go ahead and start going into some other things that we have to work on before we wrap up the show. But again, you know, Mason is just an amazing author, and we're super appreciative of the fact that he joined us today on the show. So let's go ahead and move it on and bring it home.
All right, so we're going to jump right into the end of the show, right?
Yeah.
That's right. Let's go.
Yeah. So
point at me.
Yeah, I'm starting this.
Yeah, he's going to start this, but okay. You need to give that man a timer.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Wow, the intern was quicker than me today. All right. And go.
All right, everybody. So here's Mama Kim's Minute. Mattel unveils Creatable World line of gender-neutral dolls. Number two, don't fall for the scam website offering to verify that you're not a sex offender. We are not affiliated with the scam for harassment protection for gay and bisexual community identification, despite their attempt. Attempt to make it look that we are. Anyway, so number three, 12 people share how they knew they were bisexual. Four, Jonathan Van Ness explains why he's endorsing Elizabeth Warren. And that's Mama Kim's Minute for today.
That's amazing. So I know that we need to push forward, but I wanted to just, can we quickly give a synopsis of number two? Because I feel like that was a tongue twister and it sort of left me
there
like,
is,
in limbo.
Yeah. I'll give you a quick synopsis. All right, so there is a campaign going around to... I'm trying to pull it up on my computer so I don't misquote myself, but of course, the internet's being slow. Here we go.
Blame the intern.
Actually, it's not even working now.
Oh.
Okay, basically, from my understanding of the article, which I didn't get to read in its entirety, there's a scam going around on Grindr, Scruff, and other social media sites... for a service called Harassment Protection for Gay and Bisexual Community Identification. Basically, what these people are doing is they are trying to identify individuals to identify themselves as gay, bisexual, transgender, whatever it is, so that they can list them somewhere or so that it can be notated. So basically, what you want to do if you're being asked on a social media platform to identify yourself, do not do it.
Yeah, so basically, like you were saying, it's like they're trying to verify or at least claim that they're trying to verify that you are not listed on any legal registries as a rapist or a sex offender.
Right.
So don't do it.
Correct.
I thought that was important because I was a little confused myself when I heard it. I was like, whoa. Yeah. So, all right. So, great. Thank you, Mama Kim, for sending us those stories. It's amazing that, you know, we get this information because sometimes, you know, we're so hyper-focused on certain things, we miss certain stories and they're important. So, Chris?
Nope.
All right. So, this week's Gay Talk Term brought to you, of course, by... GayRealEstate.com. is Hero Candy. So Hero Candy is a football player or some other sport idol who will allow homosexual fans to blow him. That is your gay talk term this week. Hero, Hero Candy.
All right, Christopher.
All right, so on this day in gay history, brought to you, of course, by
GayRealEstate.com.
When? September. Oh, God, it's hard to see because it's my phone. September 30th, 1901, from New York, Charles Hall revealed to have been born a female. This is, it's an interesting one. This person is not transgender, but the app didn't have too many too exciting ones today. So Charles Hall, born in Massachusetts, lived as a man and was married to Giuseppe Boriani of Milan, Italy. An Iowa newspaper reported, quote, Miss Hall decided that men can get along better in the world than women, and she adopted male costume. The couple took a ship from Genoa to the United States, but Hall died en route. When the ship arrived in New York on this day, Hall's gender identity makes headlines nationwide.
That's interesting.
That is an interesting story. Wow. So that's on this day in gay history.
All right. Well, this is going to be a mouthful for all of us. So we've got so much to announce on today's show. Yeah. So listen, we're going to try to get through it. Okay. So here we go. If you love the show, make sure you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By subscribing, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as our episodes are published. You can also support us on Patreon, which gives you access to this amazing video live stream that our patrons get to see. And all you need to do is just donate. We take donations and any denominations of a dollar or more, and we collect those every month. So feel free to help us out if you'd like. Christopher?
Next week, we're excited to welcome back to the show the lovely Dr. Evan Goldstein, of course, for this month's Tales from the Tale at our new time at 6 o'clock p.m. So tune in, see if I make it on time.
Yeah. So I feel that we need to elaborate a little bit on that because we did promise that we were going to talk about that a little bit. So we're going to be eventually switching our time to 6 p.m. Dr. G is going to be our first guest on the 6 p.m. time slot, but we still have other guests that we had booked out until the end of October. Some of those will require that we start a show at 6:30, but I believe starting November, we will officially say we start at 6 p.m.
Correct. So thank you to our guest, author Mason Funk, for joining us on today's show. What a great conversation. His book, The Book of Pride, is available on Apple Books, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other digital platforms or your local bookstore.
That's right.
All right. Also, so exciting news. We have a special episode that we will be releasing later this week.
That's right.
We have an interview with the director and playwright for the first show of Long Wharf Theater season, Ricardo Perez Gonzalez, and David, I'm going to butcher his last name, so I'm going to let Tom say it.
David Mendizabal.
Yes. So this is the first ever show that we've had on our stage that really encompasses and circles around a gay love story. Brief description. So it's a breathtaking new story of forbidden love in 1950s Jim Crow Texas. Timeless in its telling, this stirring universal story of star-crossed lovers will sweep you away. In Houston, at the height of Jim Crow, segregation pervades society in every way, including the underground and illegal gay bar scene. One night, a chance encounter between Russell at a local blacks-only Gold Room bar and Tom from the whites-only Red Room leads to a forbidden romance that could destroy them both. This spellbinding on the grounds of belonging signals the arrival of a bold new voice in the American theater. And what's even cooler is if you use code GAYTALK, you get $15 off your tickets. That's restrictions right. Do apply. Sorry. Go to longwharf.org to get your tickets today. But we will be releasing a special episode later this week.
That's right. So if you're in the New Haven area or even in Connecticut, New York, Massachusetts,
or Sweden, like Hans.
Well, he'll be here in October, right?
He's seeing it on Sunday.
So I'll tell you what. So if you're there, make sure you go to longwharf.org and order your tickets and get those $15 taken off. It's amazing. All right. So, Chris,
can we please put a rubber on this?
Yes, please. Thank you.
All righty. Cool. That's the first time I've heard that this week. So, as always, our show is available.
Because it's Monday.
I know. See what I did there?
Yeah.
As always, ladies and gentlemen, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces you can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter, at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0@gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
All right. And if you need to reach out to us, all you need to do is go to our website and click on the Contact Us tab. There you can leave comments, suggest topics, leave a question for the cast or an individual host, or you can call us at 334-GAY-TALK. And if you need those numbers, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday, for now, 6:30, but eventually 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you'll be able to access that live stream on digitalstreamradio.com, as well as our website. Ladies and gents, that is our show. Thank you, and y'all have a fantastic night. Bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.